You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Cotton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are thrilled to be joined here on this first day of 2018 and Happy New Year to the listener by the third Pelton brother who did more than anyone else, us, ourselves included, to grow the Pelton Cast in 2017. So thanks for joining us, Ben Baldwin.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. As we have 8 months now of football offseason to get through, I'm looking forward to what Pelton Cast can do for us in 2018, much like last year.
Good news if you like dumplings
or hydroplanes.
I do. Hey, have you guys heard of Din Tai Fung? You guys should add it to your bracket.
Very helpful. We'll probably get that started soon. I mean, it's kind of in Seahawks offseason thing, so we have a few extra weeks to work on the dumpling bracket this year. Unfortunately, because of the fact that the Seahawks were eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday when our Carolina Panthers, we lifelong fans, were disappointed when they, despite their best efforts to keep pounding, they could not beat the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, I had a lot of faith in my Panthers and Christian McCaffrey, and I have not seen a single second of that game. But judging from my mentions, McCaffrey did something that did not help the Panthers win. So I accept no responsibility for anything that happened.
I mean, he did average 8 yards per carry. I'll give him that. Not maybe the best day for our beloved franchise quarterback, Cam Newton, who went 14 of 34 with 3 interceptions that game. But it's weird how much that outcome kind of took the sting out of the Seahawks subsequently losing to Arizona. Like, had the playoff berth actually come down to the 48-yard Blair Walsh field goal that he missed, that would have been one of the most devastating losses in Seahawks history.
Yeah. Do you think people would, if that had determined the Seahawks playoff spot, do you think people would have been more mad at Blair Walsh or for the Seahawks coaching staff for playing for a 48-yard or whatever it was, Blair Walsh field goal?
I think people would have been more mad at Blair Walsh, but people should have been more mad at the coaching staff.
I mean, we're not doing a full-on airing of grievances today, but I have a lot of coaching grievances, and that is foremost among them. I mean, the one thing, as I said to you on Twitter after the game, To Ben B, I hold out some hope that the Seahawks coaching staff already knew the Panthers had lost and was like, you know, the two spots in the draft wouldn't be the worst thing. So if Blair Walsh misses, that's great. That's, if he makes it, that's fine. But if he misses it, that wouldn't be so bad.
I wonder if they actually knew how many draft spots they would move, because Pete Carroll is so optimistic that I could see him, like, it not even occurring to him that that the Falcons would win, that the Seahawks wouldn't win the playoffs. Because there's a lot with the same record, so it came down to tiebreakers, and I think they could have ended up from 15th to 18th. And can you really see Carroll before the game saying, if we lose versus if we win, what is our draft position going
to
be?
That's a good point. He would never even think to ask that question. The people we know would never think to do that. But I just want some defense for that. I mean, I guess the other defense is they thought that, you know, Arizona's going to be expecting them to pass on third and, I think it was 3rd and 9, correct, at that point. And, you know, we can cut 6 yards on a Mike Davis draw and therefore make this a much more makeable field goal. I mean, I guess that logic is somewhat defensible and doesn't, you know, necessarily have to rely on the we're quote unquote in field goal range notion, but that play just did not work, like many Seahawks running plays.
Yeah. Have you heard the Arizona Cardinals are number one in rush DVOA defense?
I have heard that, although I also heard that they were number 32 in rush DVOA offense. And for the first half, that did not appear to be the case. Anything else we want to discuss specific to this game?
I think let's just forget that ever happened.
All right, well, let's talk about the season as a whole, because this is a season, and we're sort of neatly bookending things here with Ben, much as we plan to do later this week with Danny Kelly. He doesn't know this yet, but we do. We talked before the season opener in Green Bay, and expectations were high for what the Seahawks were going to be able to do this season after trading for Sheldon Richardson the previous weekend. And those expectations were obviously not met. Mistakes were made. So let's get into kind of what went wrong and how meaningful that is going forward. Do we want to start with the offense?
Yeah, but I mean, let's start with what the most important piece of the offense, what fueled the entire offense was for 2017, and that's the offensive line.
That was me saying. So the thing that went wrong, and it's now going to be very costly in the future, is George Fant getting hurt in August. So there's a part of me that just wishes we could see what the Seahawks season would have looked like if Malik Bell and George Fant hadn't gotten injured, and just see how the season would have played out, how Russell Wilson would have looked if he hadn't played half the season, missing a left tackle. It was a strange strategy for the Seahawks, only playing 10 players on offense for half the season. But who are we to question? And then one thing that I've been struggling with is we had, this is Russell Wilson's sixth season. Last year he was hurt. And in all the other seasons, the Seahawks were really good at running the football. And I always thought, and I saw a lot of people share a similar sentiment, that was, as long as Russell Wilson is a threat to run the ball and as read option or scrambling, then the Seahawks are probably going to have a pretty good rushing attack. And last year, we kind of threw out because Wilson was hurt for basically the entire season. But this year, Wilson was healthy, and it was one of the worst rushing offenses with running back carries in the last couple decades. So what do we make of that?
That the offensive line once was good at run blocking and questionable at pass blocking, and that's an acceptable situation. And now they are very, 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 very bad at run blocking, I think is the only conclusion. I mean, we did see a tiny bit of what you're talking about. I feel like in the season finale with Mike Davis being successful when they started running more read option and Russ was keeping it more frequently because he only runs when the team is down by several scores, and the Seahawks got to that point. So, you know, he did have 10 carries for 48 yards yesterday, although 33 of those came on one play. But clearly something in the run blocking scheme needs to be changed dramatically. I think I can think of one thing in the run blocking scheme that Seahawks fans might like to be changed.
And so on the outside, how do we go about thinking about how much of the blame should be assigned to coaching staff versus players and roster construction?
I mean, that's a tough question because, you know, one of the things I tweeted about this a few weeks ago, like fans often treat coaches or coaching changes specifically is a deus ex machina, where it's just like anything I don't like, anything that's going wrong, we change coaches and magically it's all going to change. Like coaching is important, but it's not that important. And I think sometimes situations like what happened with the Rams with Sean McVay this year, like, yes, undoubtedly Sean McVay is a much better coach in 2017 than Jeff Fisher was in 2016. And and the rest of that that coaching staff, shouts to Rob Boris. But also they added Andrew Whitworth. Jared Goff had another year of maturity. A lot of things came together to produce this. You can't just look at it and say that Sean McVay individually is, you know, 7 wins better than Jeff Fisher or whatever the difference was in their record. Like, it's not fair to attribute all of that. And then also, you know, odds are that when teams are unsuccessful, they're probably somewhat unlucky. And when they're successful, they are probably somewhat lucky. And that you should regress those results somewhat to the mean.
And did you notice any difference, Ben, with the offensive line after the Seahawks traded for Dwayne Brown? Because we kind of looked at that as something where he would be the savior of the offensive line, bringing in Dwayne Brown, a known talent. Granted, he's coming off holding out and not playing in the season. But did you notice any difference in the line getting better at that point?
So Brown himself, he's a very good player. And I do these offensive line cutups every week where I just look at every pass protection snap. And Brown is a player that jumps off the screen is looking like he actually knows how to play football, which makes him very, he jumps off the screen compared to the rest of the Seahawks offensive line. But the kind of worrisome thing is, even though Brown himself looks very good, when I've been looking at the percent of time Russell Wilson is under pressure relative to how often a given opponent pressures the opposing QB, it was pretty good for the first 4 or so games after getting Dwayne Brown. But then in the last 5 games of the season, the percent of the time Russell Wilson was under pressure was at least 10 percentage points more than the opponent average. For example, against the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys pressure opposing QBs 36% of the time, and against the Seahawks, the Cowboys pressured Russell Wilson 52% of the time. So in that sense, it's really discouraging because they did add a very good left tackle. On film, he looks really good, but the overall results for the pass protection unit are still bad. So in terms of the offseason, really know where that leaves us. Because how are we, if we were running the Seahawks, how would we improve the protection around Russell Wilson?
So, I mean, I think the Dwayne Brown situation spoke to something I've always believed, which is, you know, that a lot of that there are some things in football that are strong link. Your as good is your best player. And there are a lot of things in football. This is interesting. In most sports, I think the weak link, where you're only as good as your worst player, usually that tends to be true on defense. But the one place on offense where it's really true in sports is with the offensive line, because of the fact that, you know, it doesn't matter how well Dwayne Brown blocks. If there's interior pressure, that's still not going to make a difference.
I want to do later when we talk about 2018, I want to do predictions for offensive lines, because I think that's a fun thing to look back on.
Yeah, it worked out so well for us last year. Shouts to Gary Gilliam. I mean, Fan is going to be an interesting one to see how they deal with. But yeah, I guess let's save that for 2018. I mean, clearly, I guess here's a question worth asking. So I lost my mind a little bit during the first half of yesterday's game and tweeted, it's the offensive line, it's the offensive line, it's the offensive line, it's the offensive line. And that's a mild amount of pushback on that from Seahawks fans. And the conversation we were having, Tristan and I, was I was thinking back to several years ago, Chris Brown at Smart Football on Twitter had been asked by someone, like, what's a way offensively to scheme around having a bad offensive line? And my recollection of this was several years ago, so I may be misquoting him now, was that he was like, yeah, there is no way to do that. Like, the offensive line is involved in everything you do. So do you see a way for the Seahawks to, quote, creatively scheme around not being successful on the offensive line?
I think there's a handful of plays that you can run that aren't as offensive line dependent. So the bootleg rollouts or the quick screens, things like that. But as an overall offense, if the defense knows that your goal is to get the ball out of quarterback's hands in 3 seconds, then they're not going to run deep routes. They're going to be breaking on everything, and it's just going to be impossible for quarterback to do anything. So I think that's fair. If you don't have an offensive line, then you can't really have a functioning offense.
Is there anything else offensively worth discussing?
We should talk about, we talked about the offensive line, and you said it's the offensive line, but is there any, like, blame feels weird? Is there any blame to be assigned to the running backs who are running behind this offensive line?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask this, because I just, something like midway through the season, I just stopped watching the rest of the when I went back to watch the game, because they all looked the same to me. Like, I think it was the Houston game, where after the game, Pete Carroll's like, yeah, we saw something on film with Clowney where we thought we could really take advantage of him in the rushing game. So they were running behind Yombo at Clowney, intentionally, and then very surprised that it didn't work out. And then after that, I was like, I can't do this anymore. So
yeah, I mean, I think clearly the Seahawks offensive running back core was not effective this season. And I think what we're going to do at the end of the show, I don't think Eddie Lacy's going to be back next year is my hot take. But I think the vast majority of running back success is determined by the offensive line. And there, again, you know, along those same lines, okay, which running back is going to be successful on, you know, the play early in the first half against the Cardinals, where two Cardinals defensive linemen have penetrated basically to the point of the handoff between Russell Wilson and Mike Davis. Like, there's not a way to solve that as a running back. That's, you're screwed.
And some of this might be scheme. So it feels like they asked the Seahawks linemen to make a lot of very difficult blocks where they're trying to reach across and block somebody where it's very hard to do so. And that's where a lot of the front plays get blown up in the backfield. So maybe some of it is scheme related. And I'm sure we will come back to the question of who is in charge of the offensive line scheme and what they should do about it. But there are situations in which it's very difficult for the running backs. But on the other hand, we had Lacy, Rawls, and Davis all get significant carries, and all of them are going to have something like negative 30% DVOA. So if we thought it was the running back's fault, then we would expect at least one running back to be somewhat successful, and that really didn't happen.
Yeah. How about the receiving core this year? How do we feel about their performance as a group?
I think Lockett was a very big disappointment. One of the things that stood out from the 2015 season when Wilson and the Seahawks offense was very good was how consistent of a downfield threat he was. And I don't know if hopefully it's recovering from injury and it will improve over time, but if he's just never the same player again, then that is pretty substantial blow to Seattle's receivers.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously saw the burst from him yesterday on that kickoff return for a touchdown. It seemed like at times, even when the Seahawks offensive line was able to give Russell Wilson some time, you know, give him an effective pocket, especially when the Cardinals kind of went to the three-man rush, for example, those kind of plays, then the Seahawks wide receivers did sometimes have difficulty creating separation aside from Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And
should we turn to defense then?
Well, I want to talk about also Jimmy Graham really quick, because I felt like we saw him be used scheme-wise very differently than we've seen in the past. And the Seahawks this year figured out something that we probably were desperate for them to figure out in Jimmy Graham's entire tenure in Seattle, and that's how to use him in the red zone. But somehow they forgot how to use him on the rest of the field this season.
Yeah, I think the important question from this is how much of this is age-related decline. I haven't did a look recently, but my memory of the tight end aging curve is that it's not pretty, and tight end is already, since it's a physical position, it's where people are more injury-prone. So if this is happening because Graham is declining athletically, then again, that doesn't, even if the Seahawks bring him back, that doesn't bode well for what we can expect next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You would say, I think that the all-time great tight ends have generally been able to defy that, which is part of the reason that they are all-time great tight ends. But, you know, Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, Jason Witten, those players seem like have been able to extend, you know, their effective play, partially because of the fact that, again, they were playing at such a high level in their prime. So it'll be interesting to see if Jimmy Graham can kind of match that, or if, because of the fact that he was perhaps more reliant on his athletic gifts than, well, I mean, I guess, you know, Gates is probably somewhat similar, Gonzalez to a lesser extent, obviously all those guys sharing the common football or basketball background, you know, if that makes him more prone to declining as his athleticism goes.
And then at quarterback, Russell Wilson. So he had this amazing season contributing to almost every single one of the Seahawks' offensive touchdowns that they scored, being such a huge portion of the offense and their yardage. Kind of everything went through Russell Wilson. But at the same time, I think that we learned that Russell Wilson probably isn't a top five quarterback. He's probably in the range of, you know, 8 through 15 or something like that. I believe where did he rank? Number 17 in DVOA, number 16 in DR, number 11 in QBR. And that feels pretty accurate. I mean, with a good offensive line, we know that Russell Wilson can be an excellent quarterback. But is there any blame to be assigned to Russell Wilson for this offense never being able to find its rhythm?
I think blame is a strong word. There are he has taken some criticism from the Seahawks fan base for holding the ball, creating sacks when he probably shouldn't have. And all of this is true. And he in some ways, he does make pass protection more difficult for tackles, especially. But a lot of the Seahawks pass protection issues are guards just getting blown up right off the snap. So this happened against Jacksonville and the Rams, especially. And like, if you can't block Aaron Donald when you're double teaming him, then quarterback can't do anything about that. There's just nothing he can do. So I think, sure, Wilson could have played better, and there were probably a couple games where if he had played a little bit better, the Seahawks would have won. But overall offense is so dysfunctional that I hope the energy is put into improving the situation around him rather than I'm guessing Wilson himself, because he's the quarterback we've got.
Okay, so to answer that question for myself, we went through yesterday and asked the question, is there any player you could trade Russell Wilson for? Any player in the league, you have to take on their contract and their age. Would you trade Russell Wilson for any player in the league? And I think we both concluded that we probably would not.
You wouldn't trade him for Wentz on the third year of his rookie contract and however old he is, probably early to mid-20s?
Yeah, I don't think I concluded that.
not with the injury. I mean, Wentz and Deshaun Watson are the two who stand out, but both of them coming off pretty severe injuries.
Yeah, I guess the recovery rate for quarterbacks off ACL injuries is probably pretty good, especially Wentz, he does use his athleticism, but he's not completely reliant on it, and contract is just so good.
Yeah, I agree with you that I'm much more concerned about how Watson would come back, especially the fact that it's multiple knee injuries in his case. The similarities to RG3 are a little troubling. I don't think that necessarily means that he's doomed to follow the same path, but it's at least enough of a concern that you might not be able to take advantage of winning on Deshaun Watson's, you know, while he's still cheap. Wentz, I think it's much more likely that you'd be able to do that. So, yeah, I would trade Russ for Wentz. But it is a surprisingly short list because it's either players that are older than him, the players who are higher than him on the quarterback list, or, you know, guys who are – it's question marks, you know, in terms of the results, I guess, if you want to look at like someone like Dak Prescott, who has been was rated higher by QBR this year. But I don't know if I feel like even with the contract bonus that I would feel as confident at the Seahawks offense with Dak Prescott as the at the controls as Russell Wilson because of the difference he would be facing in terms of the supporting cast.
Yeah, we saw Dak Prescott without a left tackle and it was not pretty.
Exactly. All right, should we move on to talking about the defense this year? I mean, you know, the defense, injury is obviously a huge factor in why the defense was probably not as elite as we expected this year. But even, you know, when the Seahawks were relatively healthy at the start of the year, never had Malik McDowell, of course, it wasn't quite the production I think you would have expected of this unit with all these Pro Bowlers adding Sheldon Richardson. Is it fair to be disappointed by what we saw from the Seahawks defensively this year?
Yeah, I think so. When the Seahawks traded for Sheldon, everyone was like, oh, it's... I don't think people understand the Seahawks have Sheldon Richardson, and it really, like, they were good, but they weren't this kind of world destroying defense that people expected them to be. And even so, looking at points allowed to start the season, like they allowed 33 points to Tennessee when they were pretty healthy. They allowed 38 points to Houston when they were pretty healthy, and obviously got destroyed by the Rams, although that was partially field position related. But a Pete Carroll defense probably finishing around the middle of the pack in DVOA is not going to be something that he's happy with, even with the injuries.
So what do you think going forward then the Seahawks can do to try to improve on that? I guess one place we should look at perhaps in particular is the fact that this unit didn't necessarily create the kind of pressure you were expected. They were maybe a little bit above average in adjusted sack rate. Michael Bennett certainly created a lot more pressure than he actually was able to generate and finish sacks. But do we think that this is just not the fearsome pass rush that was associated with the best of the Pete Carroll defenses?
Yeah, I think the loss of Cliff Avril, he got hurt in the fourth game of the season, really didn't have a lot of production before that. And I think that was a big loss. The loss of Malik Dell, even though we don't know what he would have been, was they spent a premium for that position and probably would have contributed some as a pass rusher. And the loss of both of those guys, and then they had other players in and out of the lineup. Nas Jones got hurt. I think Jaron Reed he missed a couple games. So there were injuries, players missing, and yeah, they didn't get the kind of game changing pressures that Seahawks teams have had.
They kind of never really did either great. It was never a great pass rush or a great rush defense from the D line. Both were solid at various times. I think the rush defense was very bad at the beginning of the season and then got pretty good and then was a little bit destroyed at the end of the year, but never a great pass rush. They kind of never did anything really well where you could take that out of the opponent's game.
I mean, you had the couple of games, I think you would point to winning in LA against the Rams, the defensive performance there, especially the ability to generate turnovers and save some drives. And then also the Eagles' performance, the first half of that game, given the injuries that they had at that point, really one of the more impressive defensive performances. But again, it's the sustaining that on a week in, week out basis that I don't think we saw. Ben?
I agree. I feel like I'm talking a lot in criticism, but I try not to monopolize that.
I mean, you're the guest. You're supposed to talk a lot.
Okay, I'll fly.
All right, should we spin towards looking at 2018?
Wait, can we talk special teams for 1 second?
Oh, no, okay, good. Yes, we should definitely talk about special teams because if you look at a place where the Seahawks really have declined from, you know, the glory days of the Pete Carroll era, and something that has always been a focus, it seems like, for him and for the team, and something they went out and tried to improve last year, and it didn't take. Did not take this year. Just, you know, there were some good moments for the special teams, but as a season, what went wrong and what could the Seahawks do differently going forward?
So the first thing that people are probably going to bring up is Blair Walsh. And I think I had no problem at all with the signing. The Seahawks were, as you guys would say, banking on regression to the mean working for them. And maybe that will happen over Blair Walsh's career, and one would expect it would, but The Seahawks did not get that in 2017, and it proved costly in a couple games. One question is, if you're going to invest in something, then you want to see results on it. But special teams performance is so random that it's hard to believe that there's a strong link between how much you invest in it and how well that the team actually does. It feels like either you have a great punter and field goal kicker like the Rams do, or you're just living in variance. And there's not a lot in between.
I mean, I feel like the punt coverage was a disappointment to me, because I think that's a place they really tried to attack with the signings of, you know, Will Hoyt and Garvin probably ended up playing more on defense than they expected, and that probably took them a little bit out of the special teams mix. And they had some injuries with DJ Alexander, but, you know, those were guys I think that were specifically trying to address the fact that area wasn't good enough in their opinion in 2016, and then it just didn't get a ton better in 2017. So that I would look at. I mean, the other thing with Blair Walsh, like, this is something we talked about when the Seahawks signed him. Like, yes, he's likely to be better on kicks than he was in that half season in Minnesota after the miss against the Seahawks in the playoffs game. But he was never that great to begin with. So regression to the mean is only going to work so much in your favor. I guess he ended up being somewhat better on kickoffs than I would have expected. But still, the key for the Seahawks is probably, as much as everyone focuses on the missed field goals, when you're trying to pick a kicker, you should be picking them primarily based off their kickoff ability, because that's more consistent season to season.
By kickoff ability, is this ability to kick to the 1 yard line and force opponents to bring it out?
That probably actually at this point is the best aspect of it. You know, if you trust your return team, your coverage team, then yeah, that's better probably than consistently ending up with the opponent at the 25. All right, so an exercise we wanted to do with you is to go through all the key free agents, virtually all the free agents, and then a few players who, you know, could be cut for cap savings or could hypothetically be traded, and just do an in and out in terms of whether we expect them to be on the Seahawks next season. So let's start this with the player who nominally you would think has the most likely chance of being on the Seahawks next season, but there is this notion of the idea that the Seahawks might try to trade Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, in or out?
I think he will be on the Seahawks next year.
Yes, in.
Hot take. In. Yeah, I mean, it's, you don't trade quarterbacks in their prime. It's impossible to think of an example of a quarterback who had wanted to stay on a team and had been traded in their prime like Russell Wilson. I mean, Jay Cutler, I guess, would be the closest. And A, Jay Cutler is no Russell Wilson. And B, you know, he really initiated that when he went from Denver to Chicago. So it does not pass my any chance rule.
I think you mentioned this before, Ben. When you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, when you have a top 10 quarterback, you just reload with that quarterback every single season.
Yeah, the bottom half of the league are stuck in the bottom half of the league because they can't find a franchise quarterback. So willingly giving up your franchise quarterback is an idea to me.
There, but for the grace of John Schneider, go away. all right, let's talk about the running back position where, you know, I think basically the only given, I would say, necessarily to come back is probably Chris Carson. So you have Mike Davis is a restricted free agent. Is Thomas Rawls. Eddie Lacy is an unrestricted free agent. JD McKissick is an exclusive rights free agent. And then you've got CJ Procise, who there is under contract, but there is this like undercurrent from Seahawks fans that somehow they should try to move on from him because of his history of injuries. So let's go through those guys in alphabetical order. Mike Davis, in or out?
So is this predicting what the Seahawks will do or saying what we would do if we were running the Seahawks?
A little bit of both, but predicting what the Seahawks will do. And then if you have a different take on that, feel free to share.
I think he'll probably be in.
In.
Yeah, I mean, in. I think that, you know, they'll want depth and competition to that position. And he's certainly done enough to be in that mix unless someone comes in with a ridiculous offer for him as a restricted free agent. Eddie Lacy.
Out.
Out and out of the league.
That seems like a reasonable take at this point. Out. JD McKissick.
In.
I mean, I don't see, again, same thing. I don't see why you wouldn't want him to be part of that mix. If you are keeping four running backs, I think it's reasonable for, you know, potentially two of those even to be JD McKissick and CJ Procise as guys who are more kind of third down backs. So that leaves Thomas Rawls is perhaps a more interesting question.
Sorry to keep asking. Is this for the 53 next year or who will be coming to camp in July?
Let's go with coming to camp and then, you know, let's go with that.
There's going to be some attrition that we don't know about that happens during training camp that we just can't predict. But who's going to be coming to camp for the Seahawks?
I think Rawls will be in.
I think he's out.
I think he's in. Again, same thing. Unless someone for some reason is in love with Thomas Rawls and decides to make him an offer, I think he probably signs the tender and comes back for that and, you know, then tries to make the team in camp. Is it worth asking CJ ProSize?
I would say in.
In.
In as well. I mean, I guess just maybe at the end of training camp, if he's again dealing with injuries, you decide not to save him a spot on the 53, but there's no reason not to have him on the 90 going into training camp.
So for running backs, do you think, Ben, that the Seahawks will go out and try to sign a running back in free agency or look to a running back near the beginning rounds of the draft?
I think yes, which is my greatest fear, but I could very well see them say, we need to boost our running game, and the best way to do that is to go invest in a running back.
I just think they're so high on Chris Carson that they are going to believe that he can be the guy next year, you know, especially if you still have Mike Davis and Thomas Rawls around as complimentary options. So I would be a little surprised if they did make an aggressive move with a running back.
Carson had the same injury as Rawls in 2015.
Yeah, I think they're similar. I mean, you know, he clearly has happened earlier, so he's going to have a full off season, whereas Rawls, you know, I think his recovery would have lasted well into the off season. So I think that's maybe a factor too. They'll have an idea of where Chris Carson is in his recovery by the time they're making these decisions.
He'll be back for the playoffs.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
After the Seahawks take their bye week.
Yeah. All right. Wide receiver, really probably the only question here is Paul Richardson, who will be an unrestricted free agent after the end of his rookie contract. Paul Richardson, in or out?
In.
In, and I think it's going to be expensive.
I also think in. I mean, I think, you know, the Seahawks, you need someone else besides Doug Baldwin as a reliable receiving option. You can't say that about Tyler Lockett at this point. And you probably can't say this about any of the players at tight end at this point. So I think Richardson will probably be a priority for them despite the precarious cap situation.
Yeah, I think the Packers are a good counterpoint to this. They're in a similar situation where Jordy Nelson is aging and nobody else is really reliable. And they just gave Davante Adams, who was in the same draft class, a ton of money. So I think the Seahawks are kind of backed into a corner. We'll have to do the same thing.
Devontae, did he get $58 million over 4 years? Am I remembering that correctly?
About $14 million a year.
Yeah, which is 14 and a half. Okay. So where do we think that sets the market for Paul Richardson? Like how does he fare relative to Devontae?
I would guess that Richardson would get less because of the injury history, but it's I'm not a cap or contract expert, so my guess could be wrong.
It's going to be close, though.
Yeah.
It'll be $10 million plus.
All right, so let's move on to tight ends. And I think perhaps the most interesting question on the Seahawks roster for next year is Jimmy Graham. Is an unrestricted free agent Jimmy Graham in or out?
Out.
Out.
I think probably out just because of the cap situation. I think they do value what Jimmy Graham does and certainly should value what he did in the red zone this year, which like it's not going to be fun if you lose Jimmy Graham and all of a sudden go back to the Seahawks actually trying to score touchdowns by rushing in.
No.
Shouts to third Pelton brother Zach Whitman for the stat that the Seahawks had zero rushing yards from their running backs inside the 10-yard line this season. That is impossible. How does that happen?
Oh, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the market is for Jimmy Graham because he is an older tight end. I think teams will see the value, but then you ask the question of who is out there who's going to pay Jimmy Graham because it'll need to be a team who says to themselves, this receiving tight end is the last piece to our offense. And it'll be interesting to see if there is a team that exists. And if the market does crater, I could see there being a chance that the Seahawks decide to bring Jimmy back.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Kind of like the Luke Wilson situation last year, let him test the market. And if there's not a whole lot there, then bring it back.
So speaking of Luke Wilson in or out? I think he's in, especially if Jimmy walks.
Probably in for similar reasons to last year where the Seahawks probably value Luke Wilson more than anyone else does. So, you know, this is just a logical outcome for him to stay.
And then, so not a ton of choices to be made on the offensive line with regard to contracts, but the Seahawks signed Luke Jokel to a one-year deal last year, had an okay season.
Yeah, season.
Luke Jokel, in or out?
I think this is one of the hardest ones. I'm going to say out, but not feel great about it.
I think he's out.
All right, I'll break from consensus and say, in under the same logic that, you know, the Seahawks really liked Jokel. I think they were reasonably pleased with his play. And I don't think the market for him is going to be there because, you know, why would the market?
I think there's going to be a monster market for Luke Jokel. I'm not even joking. I think there's going to be a team who will pay Luke Jokel $10 million a year more.
God bless you if you do. God bless you if you do.
Can we do our predictions for offensive line, 2018 offensive line, with the little information that we know right now? Ben, what does the 2018 offensive line look like?
Brown at left tackle, a gigantic question mark at left guard, and then Britt, Posick, Ifedi.
I'm thinking they're going to try George Fant at left guard. That's the best that I've got.
I got one better for you. All right. Here's my prediction for the offensive line. Brown, Posick, Britt, Ifedi at right guard, and then try George Fant at right tackle.
Oh, there we go.
I like that.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Well, that's good to down pay for here.
But left guard, obviously, the biggest question mark. And they might want to just have George Fant sit under Dwayne Brown for another year. It feels like they could go into the season with that intent, and he's probably getting on the field, given what we've seen this year. There's nobody else really bubbling who it feels like is actually an NFL-caliber starting offensive lineman. You look at Reese Odhiambo, and you don't say to yourself, that guy's going to be starting at some point.
Well, here's a question. If they re-sign Jokel and don't have that huge hole at left guard, if Fant looks good in training camp, would you consider trading Dwayne Brown again?
No. what is the market going to look like for Dwayne Brown with 1 year left?
I mean, it was Dwayne Brown with a year and a half left. The Texans got a second and a third. It worked out really great for the Texans.
The Seahawks don't get value when they trade players.
I understand that. They clearly overpaid. It's unquestionably true at this point.
The hard thing with that is if you traded him, then you're once again a George Fant injury from complete disaster at left tackle.
That is true. All right, let's move along to the defensive line. So we've mostly been focusing so far on players who are free agents, but a couple of interesting, one of them health-related questions about other players will be on the roster. We'll start with Michael Bennett, who, you know, said to Greg Bell of the News Tribune that he thought it might be his last game with the Seahawks. I think that sounded a little fatalistic more than it was, you know, legitimate expectation or something that would be reasonable for the rest of us to expect. But the Seahawks would save about $3 million if they cut Michael Bennett next year. Michael Bennett, in or out?
In.
The Seahawks players, the whole team as a whole burns so hot that they're a very dramatic team, right? It's like if Earl Thomas gets injured, all of a sudden he's thinking about retirement. Or they feel very comfortable saying all the thoughts that are in their head, where other players from other teams might just be like, I think this for a second, but I'm not going to tweet it, or I'm not going to say it to Greg Bell. But the Seahawks burn very hot. And after every season, I think they're always thinking this might be the last season. And I think that's why we see this conversation kind of happen a lot. But there's really no logical argument for Michael Bennett not coming back next year.
Yeah, they're kind of, as a big picture thing, they're, it seems like the sentiment on Twitter is that like, the Seahawks are rebuilding. Everybody's going to be gone. The whole team's going to look different. Sherman, Thomas, and Chancellor are all going to be gone, and Bennett and Averill. And I would be very surprised if that happened. Most of those guys are under contract. Why would they get rid of Earl Thomas? Bobby Wagner? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the fan base also, Seahawks Twitter also runs pretty hot. Much like the team. Yeah. I mean, all right, so let's get to Cliff Averill because, you know, I mean, none of us are doctors here. So that's the first question is whether he will be able to play football going forward. But even if we make the assumption that he's able to play football going forward, he's a pretty likely cap casualty with only $500,000 in dead money. Seahawks would save $7.5 million if they moved on from Cliff Averill. So in or out on Averill?
So along with Jokel, I think this is the hardest one, and Sherman too, which we'll get to. So they would free up $1.5 million in cap money. If he were as productive next year as he was in 2016 and in previous years, which is a huge if, then I would not cut a productive pass rusher to get $7.5 million. I don't think it would be worth it. The question is, to what extent are the three games he played early in the season and wasn't super productive predictive of the future or just kind of a bad three games? And I don't really have the answer to that. So all this to say, I'm going to say out because the potential medical issue and cap saving together, one of them might come out. Surprise me if he were still there.
I'm out.
I'm going to go out because of the fact that I think it, as much as I agree with you that $7.5 million is a bargain for what he did 2 years ago, A, given his age, you can't expect that. And then B, with the emergence of other pass rushing options, I think the Seahawks are probably just going to look at it as, you know, the difference between him and perhaps Deion Jordan, who we'll get to in a second here, that that's not going to be worth the $7.5 million to them.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, so let's do Deion Jordan, who is a restricted free agent. I wonder if the Seahawks wish they would have signed him to a multi-year deal after seeing him be as productive as he was in the last few games of 2017. Is there a chance that someone comes in with a big offer for Deion Jordan, given his potential and his past history, or are the Seahawks still, because of the fact that they know him best, going to value him more than anyone else? Deion Jordan, in or out?
I think in. The RFA might depress the market.
In.
Yeah, I think also in. I mean, a great piece last week from Greg Bishop on SI.com about his path to getting back. And, you know, the one aspect of this is, even, you know, he chose the Seahawks over other suitors, in part because of his relationship with Tom Cable, who we'll see. But also because Marshawn Lynch advised him to come to Seattle, thought this would be a really good environment for him. And I don't think that's changed. And I think, you know, perhaps there's also some sense of gratitude towards the Seahawks for helping him get back on the field and be productive. All right, another one of the big questions for the offseason, the aforementioned trade before the start of training camp. Sheldon Richardson, now an unrestricted free agent at the expiration of his contract, sure to command a huge deal in free agency. Sheldon Richardson, in or out?
I'm pausing because this one's really hard. I should have thought about this more ahead of time. I think out.
Fortunately, out.
Yeah, I think out. I mean, I think someone's just going to come in and back up the Brinks truck. I think this is the opposite of the case where I think the Seahawks are probably going to, with the emergence of Jaron Reed and Naz Jones this year, value Sheldon Richardson somewhat less than someone who's really defensive line needy would.
And also their cap situation. I mean, Sheldon Richardson is a player who the Seahawks would like to have very much next season,
sure,
but he is going to be a very expensive free agent.
All right, maybe quickly on this one, Quentin Jefferson, also an exclusive rights free agent. It seems almost certain that he will be back, but Quentin Jefferson, in or out?
Yep, in.
In.
In. Moving to the linebacking core, you know, you have some of the veteran reserves as free agents. The core players are under contract, but KJ Wright, the Seahawks could save $7.2 million if they moved on from him. Do we see any chance of that? KJ Wright, in or out?
I think there's a chance, but I would guess in.
I think he's in. Production's there.
Yeah, I would also agree in. I mean, I just don't think that's a place where they want to create a new hole where one didn't exist. Michael Wilhoit, the most notable of the unrestricted free agents after starting most of the year at a position that really isn't a starting position anymore, but sort of is at weak side linebacker. Wilhoit, in or out?
Out.
Probably out.
I think it depends what the market looks like. I could see the Seahawks bringing him in. I thought it was an interesting thought from Mina that they might try to look to draft another like combo weak side linebacker pass rusher.
Yes.
But as far as strictly a weak side linebacker, like that position just is not important enough to invest resources in at this point. All right, let's move on to the safeties. Let's start with Earl Thomas because he has been fueling the narrative that he might be out for reasons that, I mean, I guess a holdout for looking for a new contract would potentially be the scenario that would force the Seahawks into a trade, right? Earl Thomas, in or out?
Earl Thomas will be a Seahawk in 2018.
In.
And what do we think are the odds that the Seahawks sign Earl Thomas to an extension?
It's hard to say because it depends on what their cap situation is like. But I can see that happening.
I kind of feel like, I mean, obviously the aging curves of these positions are different, but I think the Seahawks look at Earl Thomas is the Russell Wilson of their defense, is the single most important player. So I just don't think they're going to let him get away.
I mean, it depends on what Earl Thomas does and what Earl Thomas wants in this situation.
I mean, that's also true, of course. He has to want to sign an extension and not want to sign with the Cowboys.
I think they're going to let him play out this year, though.
Huh. Interesting. I think they'd try to extend him, but I don't think they'd trade him even if he doesn't agree to an extension. Bradley McDougald, who was probably the best free agency value among the veteran players that the Seahawks signed this year, started in place of Earl Thomas for a couple games reasonably, and then slid in place of Cam Chancellor after he went down. Do we think McDougald is back, in or out?
No, I think he'll get priced out of Seattle's market.
Yes, I think he's out. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be an okay market for Bradley McDougald out there.
I'll dissent here. I think he's in on another one-year contract, a much more lucrative one-year contract, to start at strong safety next year while the Seahawks groom Delano Hill. Which brings us to Cam Chancellor, another one where really, unless you're a doctor and know his situation, it's kind of impossible to answer. But I guess what's the expectation in terms of in and out for Cam Chancellor?
So again, the medical issue is real, and we don't really know. But if he is able to play, I think he will still be with the Seahawks.
I think he is in and will be playing next year.
I think out. I my expectation is that Cam will not play football.
Really?
And at least not, you know, next year or, you know, anytime in the immediate future and or under this contract, perhaps, even though the Seahawks would only save $2.3 million by walking away from him next year. Richard Sherman, going into the final year of his contract, has only $2.2 million in dead money on the cap in terms of the remainder of his signing bonus, has an $11 million base salary. Coming back from the Achilles rupture, Richard Sherman, in or out?
Yep, this one's hard too. I'm going to say in and not feel great about it.
I think he's in. It would be tough for the Seahawks to move on for Richard Sherman at this point.
So I'm already on the record with our bold predictions for 2018 that I think the Seahawks will, I said they will trade Richard Sherman. It's obviously possible that they could not find a market and end up releasing him. But I think more likely to release him. I think there could be someone who takes a chance on him, especially since that base salary is non-guaranteed. Like they also could renegotiate it down, try to, you know, do something with an extension. I just think the Seahawks are ready to move on from Richard Sherman, especially after the fact that the defense, it wasn't great after Richard Sherman's departure, but it wasn't like last year without Earl Thomas where the defense collapsed.
Yeah, there were a couple games where not having him was noticeable, like watching Jeremy Lane try to cover Julio Jones down the right sideline. the defensive collapses were mostly not because of bad cornerback
play. Right. All right. Speaking of Jeremy Lane, the Seahawks could save $3.75 million by walking away from the final 2 years of his contract. Jeremy Lane, in or out?
Nope.
Out.
Out. It's agreed. Byron Maxwell did a solid job after coming back as a free agent off the street midway through the season. He will be an unrestricted free agent this off season. Byron Maxwell, in or out?
Bad enough on many teams, except the Seahawks, that other teams aren't going to want to pay a lot for him. So I could see that'll bring him back.
I think he's back on like a 1 year minimum deal.
Ian, and completely agree with that analysis. Deshaun Shedd made it back for the final 2 weeks of the season, did not see the field a great deal in terms of playing defense, played some on special teams. Coming back from that torn ACL, and now will be an unrestricted free agent again. Deshaun Shedd, in or out?
In.
It's probably similar logic there. I don't know if he necessarily makes the final roster, but I think he's at least in training camp. And then Justin Coleman, one of the nice finds of last season, is a nickel cornerback, will be a restricted free agent this offseason. Justin Coleman, in or out?
Being an RFA helps this team.
In, and I hope he comes back cheap.
Yeah, I mean, unless someone comes in with a monster offer for him, you know, seeing him as a really quality nickel, which is possible. But I think actually the Maxwell thing helps the Seahawks with guys like Justin Coleman, too. I mean, even though his role is very different. All right, the last notable free agent on the Seahawks roster, we've already discussed him a little bit. Blair Walsh, in or out?
I do not think he will be back.
He's kind of, there are a few people we're going to talk about here at the end who I think are the sacrifices for missing the playoffs for the first time since 2011. And I think Blair Walsh is one of those players.
I think out, and I think the Seahawks will attempt to draft a kicker in the late rounds of the draft.
There we go.
Because, I mean, you don't want to be stuck trying to, like, deal with the – like, you look at what happened to the Chargers with their kicking situation this year. As bad as you thought Blair Walsh was, there are a lot of teams in the NFL that had way worse kicking situations than the Seahawks.
I want them to sign Young Waiku, though.
I mean, that'd be fun. I definitely want David Chang to become a Seahawks fan, yes. So I'm in on that. All right, now we get to the coaching staff. So Pete Carroll tweeted a denial of retirement reports. Not even reports. I mean, Jay Glazer just suggested that he will consider his future, which probably Pete Carroll will always consider his future at the end of each year, given that he is like 125 years old at this point. But I do think he may believe that he is immortal. Pete Carroll, and then kind of a non-denial during his press conference after the game. Pete Carroll, in or out?
In. I mean, it's kind of along those same lines as we talked about with Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, every single person, Michael Bennett saying he thinks it'll be his last year. Pete Carroll burns hot, right? And after this season he's had, it's probably been a tough season emotionally for Pete Carroll. And seeing the last, I mean, I guess we've seen kind of bad images to end seasons for Pete Carroll before.
I can think of a couple.
But the last image of him saying unbelievable about Blair Walsh missing his field goal was probably a lot emotionally for him. But that said, he'll take a while and he'll be in.
I think it is worth noting, I'm in as well, but I think it is worth noting that, you know, the retirement denial, you don't have to retire to leave the Seahawks. There are other ways to do that. I mean, I don't know that he would coach for another team, but if he became a team president or something like that, I think that's possible at some point, but I don't necessarily expect it this offseason. All right, we get now to the real unpopular one. Daryl Bevel, in or out?
This one's so hard. Either one would surprise me at all. I am going to stay out, though.
I think Bevel's back.
Your bold prediction was that everyone was back, right? That was
My bold prediction may have changed.
Okay.
Oh. I mean, it's been a whole week.
A lot of new information is coming. Yeah, I'm also a lean in on Daryl Bevel. I think that the Seahawks will probably look to make a change elsewhere in the offensive coaching staff before they change the coordinator, which brings us...
Well, quickly about Daryl Bevel. I mean, there were some things that the Seahawks did wrong scheme-wise. It was kind of amazing how long it took them to get into the urgency mode this season.
Well, I mean, I think the question then we should discuss that we have discussed over time is how much of that was Daryl Bevel and how much of that is Pete Carroll's philosophy?
Pete Carroll's just like, run the damn ball. Like, are they battling every week? And Daryl Bevel's like, let's hurry it up. Let's move. Let's pass the ball. And Pete Carroll's like, I like those 2nd and 10 runs.
I mean, I don't know that it's like a war between them, that it's like a conflict of personality. But I think part of the reason that you hire an offensive coordinator is because they reflect your offensive philosophies. And Pete Carroll's offensive philosophies at this point are probably not going to change overnight, no matter who the offensive coordinator is. And I guess that's the way I look at it. All right. Now we get to the big one. Tom Cable, much maligned offensive line coach / run game coordinator for the Seahawks. Tom Cable, in or out?
I would like to be able to say out, but the way people talk about it around the league in such glowing terms and getting considered for head coaching jobs just makes me so scared that like the organization still thinks very highly of him. So I think he could be in, but I'm going to say out, mostly out of hopefulness.
I mean, I think he's out, and I really hope that he's out because he's the head coach of the Colts. I mean, that is just best case scenario for us. If somehow we could be rid of Tom Cable and he could be the coach of the Colts.
I mean, Ben, how do you feel about that as an Andrew Luck supporter?
Well, football is entertainment, and watching the reaction to Tom Cable being hired as the Colts be so entertaining that I would be all for that.
So there's a team in the NBA that is somewhat notorious for when they're ready to move on from a member of their organization. Instead of just firing this person, they manage to get them a promotion or a job somewhere else that's at least as good. It would be a really remarkable thing if the Seahawks could pull that off by Tom Cable into that coach of the Colts. I don't think that's probably going to happen, but I do think out. I mean, even though it doesn't, the fact that, you know, Blair Walsh missed the field goals that he did and the Falcons beat the Panthers, like that doesn't change anything about how good the Seahawks season was. But I agree with what Mina sort of said during our bold predictions podcast, which is that, you know, teams look at back on things differently if their season ended outside the playoffs than if they make the playoffs.
Yes.
Like there's a different impetus for change. And I think that impetus for change will probably ultimately fall on Tom Cable as the person to change because of the fact that the run game has been as bad as it has for 2 years in a row.
There has to be blood when you miss the playoffs. And I think that blood will be Blair Walsh and Tom Cable.
Yeah. And even between 9 games and 10 games, like if they had missed the playoffs winning 10 games, they could say, oh, well, usually 10 games to get in the playoffs. It's a good record. But 9-7 for this Seahawks team, hopefully will lead to something changing.
Or I want to wrap up quickly by just kind of big picture talking about where the Seahawks are as a franchise, because as Ben mentioned earlier, there's this sense that, you know, at one point, you know, I think the Pete Carroll discussion was phrased in terms of next year being a rebuilding year. And I mean, that's insane. If you have Russell Wilson and Earl Thomas and the other pieces, the Seahawks will have Bobby Wagner, who we haven't even mentioned on this podcast, had an amazing season.
if you have those pieces, you're not rebuilding, you're retooling around them. And I thought it was interesting. I looked at, you know, the teams that had similar stretches to the Seahawks and tried to look at teams that also had kind of this, you know, decline at the end of it. And is that really the quote unquote end of the era and presaging further decline? So the most similar 6-year stretches to the Seahawks in terms of wins each year, and I squared it since 1995, because I wanted to make sure it was in the free agency era where teams have been less likely to maintain their success over time. So the most similar was Green Bay from 1995 to 2000, the tail end of the Mike Holmgren era, into the 1 year of Ray Rhodes. And then I think that covers the first year that they had Mike Sherman as their head coach, if I'm recalling correctly here. After that stretch of similar 6-year stretches, they won 12 games in 2001. The Packers also had a very similar situation, similar 6-year stretch from 2010 through 2015 with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback. The next year they went 10-6, won the division. The Baltimore Ravens next up from 2009 through 2014, a period in which they won a Super Bowl and were consistent contenders in the AFC. They did have a downturn the next year. They won 5 games in 2015, but then have gotten back to being a competitive team the last 2 years, although they stunningly ended up missing the playoffs yesterday. San Diego Chargers from 2005 through 2010. This is sort of the Philip Rivers, LaDainian Tomlinson core. The next year in 2011, they won 8 games. Denver Broncos 2011 through 2016. So far, they probably stand as the clearest example of an end of an era team that is like this. Is of course they won 5 games this year, but a big difference.
Didn't have the quarterback in the same way as other teams had.
Yeah, and Baltimore, you might say, didn't have the quarterback either. Then the last team that was kind of similar, the Pittsburgh Steelers. This was when I looked specifically at teams that had won a similar number of games over a 6-year span to the Seahawks and then declined the following season and then won 9 games the following season. That brought in the Pittsburgh Steelers of, let's see, what was the year here? 2009, who suffered sort of a 1-season drop off there. And just won 9 games after winning 12 the previous year in 2008, which I think was the year they won the Super Bowl. The following year, they won 12 games. And then they won 12 games again the next year. So this idea that kind of teams follow this orderly path of you get better at the start of a run, and then you start declining due to age. Like, that just doesn't happen in the NFL. There's too much randomness from year to year.
The thing that's not random from year to year is quarterbacks. And when you have a quarterback, I keep telling you, Steelers. That's who the Seahawks should be looking at. That's how we should be expecting this team to look, and that's where they're at as an organization.
So you're saying that we only need to draft one of the greatest running backs and one of the greatest wide receivers in NFL history?
What round did they get Antonio Brown? But the thing is, you build up all of these pillars around the quarterback. Like, Antonio Brown doesn't exist as Antonio Brown if it's not for Ben Roethlisberger. Granted, their coach isn't 120 years old, but Pete Carroll might be immortal. You think about those Steelers defenses, though, from kind of the beginning of that era, and Troy Polamalu is not there anymore. You know, the names have changed completely, but new players filled in for those players. You know, like the end of the Seahawks era is not going to be about Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner. Those players probably will be gone. It'll be new players who we don't even know yet who will be the stars on defense. But the consistent the entire time will be Russell Wilson, who will be the quarterback, and this team will be a competitor in the 9 to 12 win range as long as Russell Wilson is the quarterback of the Seahawks.
You missed a great opportunity for a James Harrison joke there. Ben, what are you feeling about the Seahawks from a big picture standpoint?
Yeah, I think all that's fair. The Steelers also went 8-8 in 2013. And obviously since then have not struggled to find success. They have a first round bye this year. They'll probably make it to the AFC Championship game. I think so. The one thing that was sort of touched on is Russell Wilson will be the constant. He is the franchise quarterback. He's a top 10, if not better, quarterback in the league. The challenge is surrounding him with talent. So the Steelers have a great offensive line. They have Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and now a good defense again, but it's not like great transcendent players grow on trees. The Seahawks have to nail their draft picks. Unfortunately, they don't have very many this year. And in the long run, they'll be as good as the players and, to a lesser extent, maybe the scheme around him. So hopefully they'll find some studs in the draft, and that'll be what determines the path of the franchise.
All right. Well, on that more optimistic note, then we started.
It's a new day. 2018 is here.
Yeah, what do we got? We got about 8 months until this a little over seven until this.
We can all really look forward to a new season.
It's weird. I was thinking back of like the 2000. You remember the 2012 offseason after the Seahawks had lost to Atlanta, and it was like I remember being excited to watch the Pro Bowl because I just wanted to watch Russell Wilson play football.
Yes,
just couldn't wait until training camp. You know, it feels like we kind of maybe need the long break, especially for Seahawks Twitter. Like Seahawks Twitter could use some time off.
Like we're exhausted too. we burn hot also. We're all thinking about retiring after this year.
Pro Bowl's fun because watching Russell Wilson while not being under constant pressure throwing the ball is just such a joy to watch, even though it's kind of depressing because that's the only time we see it.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can rediscover that joy in Seahawks football. I mean, I think the other thing that happens is, you know, first off, we should take this opportunity to reflect on how amazing this run has been, how grateful we should be to have enjoyed it as fans so far and hopefully continue to enjoy it. But then also to reflect on, like, look, there's a lot of teams that would kill to be 9-7 and in the playoff picture until the last day of the regular season. Like, you look at Buffalo, how excited they were to sneak into the playoffs as the sixth seed. Like, don't take this for granted. As Bills fans probably took it for granted in the mid-90s after their team had been so good for a long period of time, and they didn't realize that they were going to go, like, 17 years without making the playoffs at some point. Like, you know, this has been great.
Yeah, there's a handful of Hall of Famers on the team, and not every team that you can say that about.
I guess what I'm saying is, like Pete Carroll, suck it up, Seahawks fans. Enjoy the ride. And on that note, thanks so much for joining us, Ben B., and thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you.